I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, folks. How are you? Just me popping in to say this week's guest is brilliant. It's a cracker of an episode. We recorded it quite some time ago, actually, when Liz Truss was resigning from government. And it just so happened that it was playing out on this week's guest TV in the background as we were recording. So enjoy. Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of the Proper Class Podcast. I'm Laura Checkley.
And I'm Hannah Chiswick.
And we are of course here to celebrate all things working class, because if we don't, who the bloody hell will?
Lovely.
Nice and short this week, nice and short.
Good, exactly as it should be. As always, we sit down with a working class hero to celebrate their life and achievements and discuss just how they got to where they are today. On that note, who are we celebrating this week, Laura?
Well, today's guest is without a doubt one of the most inspiring women we've ever had the privilege of interviewing. Having made her way from the fish shop fryer to the House of Commons, she feels like one of the very few politicians who actually represents real people in Britain. In fact, little fact for you, Colleen Nolan describes her as the only politician I've ever understood. And I totally get that. And quite frankly, what more could you wish for by way of accolades, eh?
At the age of 19, when most of us were still enjoying a 3-for-1 deal on WKD Blue at the uni bar, and despite only being in her third year of her politics degree herself, our guest stood as SNP candidate for Paisley and Renfrewshire South, beating longtime Labour MP Douglas Alexander to become the youngest member of Parliament since the Reform Act of 1832.
That's incredible. Never afraid to tackle prejudice head on, she has received a barrage of abuse on social media platforms for her vocal championing of queer and notably trans rights. In 2022, she married her longtime partner, Kate. Well, hey, congrats, in Glasgow. And when asked about her own coming out journey, she's reported to have replied, "I was never in."
That's true.
Describing herself as a traditional socialist, she's one of the most eloquent and yet relatable MPs of our time. Her speeches holding the government to account at every turn have been admired by politicians and Instagrammers alike. With her no bullshit attitudes and passionate representation of real people, she is a breath of fresh air in the dusty chambers of Westminster, and without doubt, one of the most inspiring women of her generation.
Given the crazy week that seems to be playing out in Westminster, and I mean, let's be honest, who knows who will be Prime Minister by the time we finish recording this episode. It is a miracle and a privilege to have her with us today. Listeners, give a huge Proper Class Podcast welcome to Partick Thistle FC season ticket holder and MP for Paisley and Renfrewshire South. It's Mary Black! Woohoo!
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Do you find it really cringy hearing nice stuff said about you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because usually I always have my now wife beside me just going, "Remember, I've seen you walk into a glass door." Like whenever anyone's nice about me. So thank you very much. I'm doing the job for her just now.
Mary, we start every week by asking our guests if they could take us back to somewhere that like really reminds them of their working class past. Where would you take us?
I was torn between two places. One would be Fir Hill, because as you mentioned, I'm a Partick Thistle supporter, and I've been going since I was as young as I can remember. My dad was always taking the two, me and my brother, and we still go. So that's somewhere where you will very quickly be cut down to size if you ever get too big for your boots, you know. So probably there. The other one I was thinking about was my granny's house, because I really do have vivid memories, you know, before I went to school when I was still in nursery, of spending half the day in hers. She was for Clydebank and had 13 kids.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's a hero of her own.
when
she was kicking about. So yeah, that's probably a nice memory.
Because she must have been pregnant most of her adult life.
So one time I horrified her when I was about 8, sitting on the puffy in front of the fire, and I sat with a calculator and I figured out, I turned around and I was like, Granny, you were pregnant for 9 years.
Wow.
Oh my god.
That's insane if you add up all the months. And
what a warrior.
What a warrior.
My stepdad is one of, get ready for it, no joke, 17 children. Two of them died.
Cool.
Yeah. And he was one of the youngest. Quite a few of them have passed now. But that's a lot, isn't it? And my mum always says that about my stepnan, like, she was just pregnant her whole life. I just mind blowing, isn't it?
And her firstborn, my granny's firstborn, my Uncle Joe, he was really disabled, you know, like both mentally and physically, he was really challenged. So my granny gave up working to look after him and then had a whole swathe of other wains.
Wow.
So, like, my memories are always of being in the house with Granny and Joe.
Is that somewhere that felt like, I don't know, safe growing up? Like, I know when I went to my nan's, because when Hannah and I, we did a podcast about why we were doing this podcast, and we sort of interviewed each other, and our heroes, and obviously where we wanted to go back to was our nan's house.
Yeah.
And I remember it feeling, I could still remember the spell. Somewhere I just felt inherently safe, and it just felt so working class.
Absolutely. I mean, my granny was always my best friend.
Oh, you know,
she was always the one sticking up for me.
So
it was always really good, but equally so was the football. Like, both of them are really happy, safe places for me. Even though there's, you know, a lot of shouting and stuff at the football, I still feels homely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you been getting involved in the women's game? I mean, obviously, I know it's, you know, with England, obviously, but is it sort of giving you a newfound passion into the women's game? Have you always been connected to that?
Well, Partick Thistle got a women's team. I actually couldn't tell you when the women's team started, but certainly over the last few years, they've really picked up and getting the attention they deserve.
Yeah.
You know, getting a lot of presence on social media and games that are online and stuff for you to view.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's really good to see that.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
You know, times are changing.
Yeah, it's really, really, really exciting. So tell us a bit about where you grew up then, Mary. Where was home? How was school? All of that.
Yeah, so I grew up, we are right on the border of Paisley, where my house is.
Right.
So you go to the top of the road and you're in Glasgow. I go home, I'm in Paisley.
Right.
and my mum, she actually worked in the school along the road from us in Glasgow. And she wanted us to go to a Catholic school. So I went to school in Cardonald, Lourdes Secondary. And that was a strange place. I remember when I first got elected, David Cameron had made a comment about how the House of Commons was really just like school. The minute I was in there, I was like, Christ, I don't know what school he went to, but...
Yeah, right.
My God. Like, mine was falling apart.
No toilet seats.
Oil paintings in this one. You know, it's mad.
That's partly true, though, isn't it? I bet that was like his school. He probably thinks all go to school somewhere like that.
That says it all, doesn't it?
So in 2016, I was invited to go and speak at Eton.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
And so I said yes to that because I was like, yes, absolutely. Mainly out of sheer nosiness, apart from anything
else. Get in there and have a gander, yeah.
And I could not believe how similar it is to the House of Commons.
Wow.
I couldn't get over it. The decor is the same. The
wow.
You know, the traditions and the vibes around it are, it totally made sense how people who've been at Eton are clearly very at home.
Yeah, it's a very smooth transition, a very smooth transition. Yeah,
definitely.
And so I take it you were pretty academic from the off?
I was always described as bright. Like, my teachers would always call me that. And the reason I remember that is because every time after I would get a school report, I'd be like, what does that mean? Like, what does bright mean, Mum? I don't understand. Yeah. Like, am I luminous? Like, but equally, I wasn't, you know, I didn't get top marks all the time and everything. And like, especially when I did my hires, chemistry and maths, I worked so hard on them and I just scraped a pass. So I was actually quite proud of that because I passed. but that was me trying my hardest at it. Okay.
So you obviously went to uni to do politics. Had you had like a really political upbringing? Were you a political family, or where did your love for politics interest come from?
Arguing, to be honest. In hindsight, I think, yes, politics was always a constant theme, but it wasn't, you know, day in, day out. I didn't have parents that were, you know, active members of political parties or anything like that. But we did, you know, we would go on protests, like we were protesting against the Iraq War, Make Poverty History, you know, the kind of big ones that you can think of. We would be out there doing that as well. But I suppose it was more just watching or being forced to watch the news. And we would come in, you know, and it would get to 6 o'clock, right? Cartoons off, The news is on. And I think subconsciously I was soaking up a lot of it. And when I think back, I remember a lot of the discussions like that my mum and dad would have about the news, which it turns out other kids weren't, you know, experiencing weren't paying attention to. Mm. And then once I was picking my subjects, I picked modern studies and, you know, I was just kind of quite interested at really the idea of how can anyone think voting Tory is a good idea? Sincerely, like, trying to understand what, all I've heard about is Thatcher and how bad the Tories are. Why are they in power so much?
I know.
And so that kind of led me down the rabbit hole, which coincided with politics in Scotland changing.
Yeah.
And when the SNP got into the Scottish government, that's when things really took off. The minute that they announced there was going to be an independence referendum, that's when myself and my dad in particular both became really politically active. You know, we started going out, knocking doors every night, doing leaflets, doing public meetings, up and down the country. You know, it grew and grew and grew until eventually I was the candidate.
I think it's really like, I went knocking on doors with my dad. My dad's a big socialist, and we went knocking doors when I was like 8, 9. And I think it's such an amazing gift, that, in a way, because I just thought politics was for me. It never occurred to me that it wasn't something that I could engage with, or that I needed a huge amount of academic qualifications in order to be, have opinions about.
And see, I thought the opposite.
Yeah.
I thought, I don't understand it, so I won't vote. It took me a long time to vote or think that I had a voice, because I thought, who's going to listen to me? I don't even know what I'm voting for. All I know is I don't want them in, you know, Tories.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how a lot of people feel.
Yeah.
It was also, because in hindsight, it was also really good, like that, my dad in particular. I mean, my mum as well. My mum's always great for finding out or arguing for who's in the right.
Right.
Whereas my dad's more of the sort of political, you know, like he can see the chess pieces almost. Dad in particular would always force me to argue. Like, he would take the opposite position just cause, and would make me have to think it through. And of course, I mean, that's obviously came in handy as I've grown up. But it was a life skill apart from anything else, you know, because whether it be the Houses of Parliament or whether it be with, a manager taking advantage of you or whatever, you have to be able to question things and try and understand things from other people's perspectives and
of course
try and figure out what the best way forward is. And sometimes, you know, being right isn't the most important thing. Sometimes it's about, well, how actually do we all get through this? We can deal with pride later, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So in that sense, yes, we are more political than other households.
And do you feel really passionate about engaging, you know, I suppose people like myself when I was growing up, not feeling like I had a voice? And I know that a lot of my family feel very disengaged. They've got more engaged recently because I think everyone's had to.
Yep.
But how do we talk to those people that feel like they don't have a voice and just to get out there and vote? Because I've still got family members that just won't vote because they think, what's the point?
Yeah.
I've got nothing to say. I don't get it. Do you find that really like, do you find that kind of, does that drive you, that sort of getting people to understand that? And
oh, definitely. I mean, like I do. It might sound cheesy, but I'm a firm believer in education, you know, like
for sure.
My family wouldn't be where they are if they hadn't had the opportunities that came out of that sort of post-World War II collectivist approach. So absolutely, I mean, education's the thing that transforms lives.
Like, I wish someone had just come into my, someone like you, come into my school and talk how I would understand.
That's what I was going to say. What struck me when I was 17 and knocking on doors was how willing people were to talk.
Yeah.
And still are to an extent. And I know that period of time was, I think, the first time, it was a wake-up call for Scotland in that it's the first time in a long time that the vote has really mattered. Like, it could make radical change if Scotland had voted yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that captured the attention of people, regardless of what side they were on. So, there was a period of time where I think Scotland was one of the most politically engaged and educated countries in Europe, if not the world.
Yeah.
You know, and of course that interest has waned a little, or has weariness has crept in almost. But particularly, I think it's trying to get across to people that two things. I'm nothing special. I'm just voicing what other folk are saying, and for whatever reason I'm able to do it in a way that folk can understand and pay attention to, so I'll keep doing that, you know, doing my bit. But it's not like I'm not going to change the world overnight. It's literally you people. It's all of us. If we all just play our small part, then things do change. If you look through history, that's when things do change. It's when people come together. And that's partly why, you know, your establishments and particularly conservative governments will do their utmost to separate people and have them fighting against each other and ostracise groups. Yeah. And if we can keep the peasants scrapping amongst themselves, they'll be too busy trying to survive how much we're robbing them.
Mm-hmm.
There is this myth that you have to have a degree, you have to have worked in, in an office or for a SPAD or in government or civil service. It's nonsense, absolute nonsense. I studied politics because I didn't like it when I studied music. There were the two things that I was interested in and I seemed to be getting good marks in, so I tried to go for it. My degree has got nothing to do with my job now. It really doesn't.
No.
I've met constituents who I think would make better MPs than me. I tell them that and it's the usual, don't be daft. No. And it's just, if we had more people willing to fight for standards, I think, is the main thing. And when I say that, I'm conscious that there is an element, especially now, that people are just exactly that. They're too busy trying to survive to be able to fight for these things.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's got to be a healthy balance, and somewhere it's going to tip, you know, and that's where I want people to realise that the future of this country is so uncertain just now, so uncertain.
Do you feel like it's the most uncertain it's been since you were elected?
Absolutely.
Like, because it feels person living in this, you know, living in Britain, it feels like the most uncertain time in my adult life, just crazy.
So recently the Queen passed away, and on the 10 days rolling news, the thing they kept repeating was her reign, she reigned over 15 prime ministers. Mm. Four of them have been in the last 5 years.
Says it all, yeah.
It's insane. You've got children who haven't even been a year old who have lived through, what, four foreign secretaries, two prime ministers, two monarchs. You know, it's just it's bizarre, really bizarre.
And have you noticed, like, amongst your, like, constituents, what would you say? Would you say that life is tougher? Would you say that people are struggling more? And what would be the big challenges you've noticed that
people
are, like,
starving?
New?
Like, it's no exaggeration. They are, people are hungry and cold.
And cold.
And people can't afford to keep their homes.
And,
they
and that
don't
only
have
feels like the beginning
go.
As well, doesn't it? Which is really scary.
And I mean, fortunate is a fitting word. We are fortunate in Scotland that we have the Scottish Government, which does provide a lot of cover and protection from some of the worst parts of the Conservatives. But even there's only so much you can do, you know, and ultimately 85% of welfare policy is still reserved to Tories. God. And all of the financial levers that are all control over the economy is still with the Tories. So it's still, you know, folk are getting battered.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like in places in England and Wales just now, and even Northern Ireland as well. But you know, in Scotland, I'm definitely very grateful that we've had devolution. And to be honest, it just strengthens my resolve that we should be independent.
Mm. Of course.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So obviously, like, this is what I'm most fascinated by, right? Yep. So you're 19 years old. Probably some people are going on, like, a uni outing to have a look around the Houses of Parliament. You're going to work in the Houses of Parliament. You still had an exam to finish or something, didn't you? I just find it's all so amazing. What was it like rocking up in the Houses of Parliament? Was it like what you imagined? Was it surreal?
So I had been down to London when I was about probably 16 or 17, and I got a tour of the House of Commons. I already kind of seen bits of it. So I, in that sense, I sort of knew what to expect. But the attention that I got after I was elected, that's something that I hadn't even considered. I thought I was just going to be another boring MP, getting on with the job, nobody cares who you are. Yeah. But that was not the case in the slightest. So that was mad, absolutely mad. You know, I remember one morning getting the underground into Parliament. In fact, no, getting the underground from the airport into Parliament, and it was all rammed packed, and I'm standing at the doors like that, and there's somebody in front of me, and they're reading a newspaper, so it's pressed up against me like that, and I can see the article, and it's just a big picture of me, and I was like, oh my God, don't look up, don't look up, don't look up, Jesus God, don't look up, and the guy didn't, he totally oblivious. It turned the page, carried on. I was like, oh, thank God. It was insane. But equally, I was so focused. Like, I did not, this isn't something that I flippantly put my name forward for. You know, I mean, it did happen no, quickly, but it took a lot of persuading from, like, my local branch and people in my life to convince me that this wasn't, I mean, it was a mad idea, the thought of me getting elected, but it meant something, and folks thought that I would be capable, you know, so I was just focused on not abusing or, I suppose, messing up the responsibility that people had given me.
So how were you received? Like, what would you say, from an outside point of view, it looks fairly clear that there is a sort of rampant sexism rife through the Houses of Parliament.
Yeah.
Do you feel that? Have you been, I mean, of course, this is such a stupid question, but how much have you been victim to that? How does it play out? Is it over? Like, what's been your experience?
There was a few immediate ones that were just overtly sexist, and I have never had a problem calling that out. You know, I don't seek or enjoy confrontation, but equally I'm not shy of it.
No.
You know, if I think you're out of order, I'm going to say to you, and if I think it needs said.
Have you always had that in you? Is that a thing just like coming from those debates from back home with your parents and sticking up for yourself, your dad encouraging you to speak out, do you think?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is also, it actually took me a while to appreciate that I was sticking up for myself, because in my head I was just going, what you're doing doesn't make sense. Like, I can't see where you're coming from without you becoming an arsehole in the situation. Like, I'm really struggling to see. So I suppose it comes from that sense as well. So, like, I remember there was one Conservative MP that I was sitting with, because, you know, there was loads that just wanted to, you know, there was a wee bit where I felt a bit like a circus freak, in a sense.
Yes,
people were, like, everybody knew me, but I didn't know anyone. So people were coming up to talk to me as though they knew me, and I was like, out of my face. This is my first day.
Oh,
I don't want to talk to you.
Oh, dear.
And I had this one Conservative MP who was sitting with me. Fine, sit there. I'll talk to anybody. And I said, when is it the summer holidays are again? And he leaned in and he said, it's not the summer holidays, it's recess, darling. And I said,
oh, go away.
And it's not darling, it's marry, sweetheart. So like that, he never spoke to me again.
No loss there.
A couple of ones, you know, a wee bit more cut than that. So very early on, I think I established, like, don't pick on me.
I'll bite back. And sort of adding on top of that, Mary, like, sexuality and your class, how has that been as well? I mean, did you feel, I mean, we spoke to Jess Phillips about this and how people comment on how she speaks, they always correct her spelling, shit like that. Do you get all, do you experience those kind of things as well?
Just yesterday, I went on my phone and I just to get an update on whether we had a new cabinet. So everyone else, I'm straight onto Twitter and I had a notification that just came up. Somebody just going, why do you look like a Ned and sound like a wee criminal, or it was something like that.
Nice.
And I mean, I've had comments like that, you know, from the very, very start.
Yeah.
And I mean, it doesn't bother me, right? It really doesn't, because I've always been a bit of a weirdo, you know. I've always just been me, you know, and I've never been able to hide it or pretend to be anything else. And thankfully, I've had such a supportive network around me that love me for being me, yeah. And that's how I'm able to do it. But when I think of if it was my wife doing this job, I can feel my blood pressure rising and the rage and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm like, oh, it reminds you that this isn't okay, or it's not normal. Because I've got a very dark sense of humour. So like my friends and my brother have set up a group chat where they would send in the worst insults about me.
Brilliant.
You know, and we would all agree on what was good patter and what wasn't. So, and I mean, that's still going strong, that group chat. So
keeping you grounded.
And there are some good insults out there. I like them when they've got a bit of, you know, a bit of humour or a bit of thought in them.
Have had to deal with a lot of mm-hmm. you know, backlash on, you know, with your support for queer rights, trans rights. And I think I watched a YouTube thing where you were just going through loads of tweets where people were just being really homophobic, transphobic. Yeah. And how do you deal with that? I mean, I know you said it must get to you a little bit like that when you think of it being else, you feel the rage, definitely. You know. I feel the rage. The rage just watching you go through all these tweets, and you were so brilliant with it.
There's moments, where it can... you know, get quite dark in your own head. But again, that's where I'm dead lucky that I've got the people in my life that I do. Most of them I had before I got elected, you know, and even the ones that I've added since then are equally just as brilliant. So I can't complain in that sense. But particularly with the transphobia, that kind of hit, it hits closer to home, because obviously, you know, when you're queer, it's always very close to home, no matter who's getting attacked.
Yeah, right.
Or no matter which letter's getting attacked. And what really struck me was how many, I suppose, I knew in my head it would always happen, but when it actually does happen and you feel it in the pit of your stomach, was there were lots of people who, you know, had spent literally years telling me, oh, Mary, you're brilliant, you're great, oh, you just say it like it is, you're so articulate, so clever, I mean, oh, fantastic. And the minute I say one thing that challenges them, suddenly all these people are nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, wow. Mm.
You're still based in Scotland, but you must have to spend quite a bit of time in London.
Yeah, about 2 or 3 days a week, or sometimes more. Yeah.
2 or 3 days a week in London. So you're in amongst your constituents, you're seeing what the challenges are that they're living with and how tough things are at the moment for people. And then you're obviously in Westminster. And do you think that the Conservative government, this is something I think about loads, do you think that they just don't get how real people live? Or they just don't give a shit.
I think
a bit of both. I'm not sure that's the most eloquent question that's ever been
honestly,
asked.
Honestly, that's what I've been saying to people. That is the two categories that currently exist, is the people who are just totally out of touch and who genuinely, I think, live in a bubble. And then you get what I would say is the majority, and it's the don't give a shits. It's just the... It's a game to them. It's a power play, you know. The people aren't important.
We were talking about when they rescinded the £25 extra universal credit, and just I was incensed when that happened. I just thought, my God,
so
people are like, people's children are starving, and it's so cruel. That's what it feels like. It feels so cruel, and actually, that how can anyone, regardless of their politics, surely one of the things that just as animals like unites us is that we don't want to see children starving or in pain. That seems to be like something that we could all probably agree on, but it appears apparently maybe not. So, and I was furious about this. And then I saw a tweet, and I can't remember whose tweet it was, but they were saying that actually it's not that they think that £25 is too much to keep giving people is that they can't understand how £25 can matter that much, when for some people £25 is a nice glass of Malbec after, you know, a vote in the Commons or whatever. And I thought, God, you know what? And I think that goes back into that thing that you're saying, those two different groups of people. I think for some people, that £25 is something that is like something someone doesn't deserve. And for another group of people, they just can't fathom how £25 can be a weekly food shop. Like, it's just not possible for them to.
You might be right. You might be right. But I think it's more a case of they don't think you deserve the £20.
Yeah.
It takes me back to the, you know, back to the old poor laws in Victorian times, where you had the deserving and undeserving poor. Since David Cameron, and even before, but definitely when he got elected, that narrative has been long at work getting embedded, and it's worked. The number of people are living in poverty who will blame, you know, drug addicts getting their money. Well, why shouldn't they? If you were sick, would you get money? And you can see that it's worked, putting people into different categories. You know, it's similar. Like, I remember I was in Liverpool and I was in a really good conversation about, you know, Scottish independence and stuff with this group of socialists, and I was explaining to them what's been missing in England is, because in Scotland I think we have had it to an extent, but what's been missing in England in particular is some political force credibly and loudly pointing out who is to blame. Because I will hear, like, that there were these socialists whose hearts are in the right place. One of them started saying, you know, I mean, there is an argument that we can't, why are we dealing with refugees when we can't even deal with our own people? Yeah. And I know how many connotations that has and things, but I appreciated them being honest.
Yeah, sure.
And that's what I was saying to them. Look, but that's what the problem is you've not had somebody pointing out to those people who can't get a house, who then go, understandably, how come somebody from Syria got a house, but I've been waiting for a year? The problem isn't the refugee. The problem is your government's not building enough houses. And the ones it did build, it's sell off to people, and it's sell off to landlords, and they're now sitting there decaying, rotting, emptying, and the rents are going up and up. And nobody's building houses. That's what the problem is. No, the refugee.
Yeah.
And even if you want to talk about why the refugee's coming over here, let's talk about what they're running from and how that came about. And let's see innocent our governments are.
Right.
You know, so it's about, again, it's educating folk and trying to get them to understand
exactly
how they're being played, essentially.
But I think people are really easy to educate. And it's just that there's a like false narrative that's really useful for people in power that, like, it's actually very difficult to understand all this. Leave it to us. Don't you worry. You know, you voted us in for, let us deal with it. And if you listen to, like, you know, one of my least favourite human beings, I was listening to Jacob Rees-Mogg yesterday speaking, and he deliberately speaks in a verbose way that makes it impenetrable what he's saying, and that is actually a very clever thing to do, because people think, oh well, that, oh,
it's an inferior complex,
thank goodness he gets it.
Making me feel small, totally.
And thinking, oh well, oh God, you know, I don't know those words. I can't. And I always say to people, you know, obviously I don't have anything like the platform you have, but if I'm explaining something, I'm a theatre director, and if I'm working with a group of people who don't come from a traditional sort of theatre background, I always say to them, if you can't understand what I'm saying, that's on me, not you. My job is to communicate, and if you can't get that, just say you're being unclear, and my job is then to become clearer. But there are plenty of directors who enjoy similarly speaking in a way that is very you know, restrictive and very
stops, well, I remember the first time I met you, Han, and I'm not academic, I'm dyslexic, I've got all sorts going on, I can act, that's what I'm good at. I remember saying to you, we were doing a play together, we'd not long met, and you said to me, if you don't understand, just ask. It doesn't mean you're stupid. It actually shows a maturity to go, I'm really sorry, I don't understand that.
What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? And it's okay to ask that. It's okay. But I felt frightened until you said that. And now I just say now, sorry, I don't get that. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But it's having the confidence to do that.
And I mean, there's also an element of, like, you're right in saying it's a confidence thing. I've been able to stop. But the rule I've always sort of taken with things is, if you couldn't explain it to a five-year-old, then you don't understand it enough.
Exactly.
And it's one of the, I actually think it was one of these stupid Facebook posts I seen, you know, it was like a quote from Albert Einstein, and I have no idea if he did say this or not. But I thought it's a good point anyway, you know, just that.
Get loads of listeners going, I think you'll find it so and so.
So yeah, I do, that's kind of a motto that I keep in the back of my head, because it's applicable a lot of the time. If you kind of get the essence across to that a child would be able to understand it, then you don't understand what it is enough.
Yeah, totally.
And actually, I think in working with the MPs I have, I think a lot of MPs hide their own insecurities and their own lack of ability by trying to sound intelligent, if that makes sense. And that's something that I've get better and better at spotting, you know, just being able to go, you don't know what you're talking about, you don't know, you're reading that verbatim, you know, it's, I've seen your whip just hand you that piece of paper, that's so.
So obviously your life's changed massively now. We always ask our guests this, and I think because you're so in touch with people, it seems like a silly question actually now, but obviously, you're walking into the House of Commons, your life's changed completely. And I'm sure financially you're more comfortable now and coming at it from a privileged point of view. Do you think you'll always still feel really connected to your working class roots?
Definitely. I mean, there's enough people that would drag me back down to size, you know.
Your WhatsApp group for starters.
Yeah, well, exactly. I just need to check my notifications. But I think, see, because I mean, again, this comes back to, I suppose, how both me and my brother were brought up. It was very much about there are things that matter in life, you know, and it's people, it's your friends, it's your relationships, it's your health. And you have to be realistic, you know, and you might have to do things you don't particularly like doing or want to do, but there's a balance to be struck. And unless it's making you ill, then go for things, try things out, don't be fearful, you know. And in that sense, I've always thought, you know, you work to live, you know, the other way about. And in that sense, I suppose my life hasn't changed so much because, like I say, I'm still hanging about with the same people, I'm still going to Fir Hill, still drinking in the same pubs. I'm now married, you know, which is nice. I've got a house that's happy to be in, you know, and my loved ones are healthy and safe there now. So in the grand scheme of things, I'm okay, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But equally, that's...
It'd be easy to get carried away though, wouldn't it? And not, you know, some people, like,
Totally.
They are working class, but they've forgotten their roots. Absolutely. A bit.
To me, there's nothing sadder than that. And
yeah, right.
And also, there's nothing... I think there's also a sense of betrayal. You know, the only way I can describe it is, see some of the things that Noel Gallagher hits out with now.
Right.
Oh, sure.
He used to be my hero. He used to talk sense and be entertaining to watch in interviews, and now you listen, I'm like, oh, what has happened to you?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you've clearly not been in a pub in ages. You know? You can feel that there's just something that's changed.
It's upsetting, isn't it, when that happens? You're like, oh no.
So just personally, I'm really conscious, you know, I don't want that to happen. And
I think that's the big difference, isn't it? Because I can understand how it can happen, but I can't understand how you'd want it to happen.
I can understand how it
happens.
Do you
know what I mean? I think, but why would you want it to? Like,
definitely.
So I think that's the big difference for people. I think there are some people who are desperate to, like, remove themselves from their communities and their beginnings and the people they grew up around. And there are other people who want to elevate themselves and those communities into also, more prosperity, but not necessarily change who they are. Right?
No. There's also something to be said, though, for the nature of Parliament, because the way, I've said before, the way that place runs, it is still a private members' club, right? Yeah. And it kind of covers itself like all private members' clubs do. In the sense, you know, yes, you have to work long hours. Yeah, of course things happen last minute. And the truth is, it doesn't need to be like that at all.
No.
If this was a business, you can guarantee the first people to be calling for it to go bankrupt would be Tories, because it is so inefficient. The hours that are wasted in that parliament is unbelievable. And it's all done under the pretense of tradition and stature, and we are the mother of all parliaments and tradition. And it's rubbish. It's absolute rubbish. But it's living and breathing in the walls. It is factored into every single role in that place. So when I'm in parliament, doors are held open for me. I can get my own, there's an MP's private tea room, it's called. You know, there's a certain reverence that people treat you with because, that's a member.
Do you get free drinks and stuff? So, such a basic question, isn't it?
What, you thinking of standing for parliament?
Yeah, like, give it a go, you know.
So,
it's
the free drinks.
So, there's not free drinks, but it's certainly not short of pubs on the estate. And I remember somebody told me, because the prices are cheaper than the outside, like other pubs in London.
Yeah, I heard that.
And the reason that I was given, and I don't know if this is 100%, was that because Parliament is considered royal estate, you don't pay VAT on royal estate. So there's no VAT added onto everything. So it's why it's just that wee bit cheaper. Which makes sense. But again, I could just be spouting lies there. But I was told that. So my point there was, I can understand how people, without even being aware of it, can suddenly start to buy into their own hype, you know, and can start to genuinely believe themselves to be better than others and better than they are, actually, and more talented than they actually are. You know, and I include myself in that as well. It's very easy, you know, to, unless you've got people that, like I'm surrounded by, to go, who are you talking to? Get yourself. You're getting the next round. What are you talking about? You know? So I think there is something to be said about the nature of Parliament and how it thrives on people not fully knowing what's happening inside the walls. Yeah. If that makes sense.
I think the thing that you said that it sounds like such a strange thing that has blown my mind so much is when you said that Eton looks and feels like the Houses of Parliament. And that makes so much sense to me. There's an innate sense of
entitlement?
Not privilege isn't the right word, but just the fact that you're owed something, that it's your right. Entitlement, isn't it? That you can't teach that. Nobody could, you could never acquire that. I think you have to. That's something you have to have been installed in you from such a young age, that this is your right, that you are somehow superior, that you were chosen somehow.
Yeah, and your voice should be heard. And
That your voice should be heard.
Oh, it's inequality. I mean, even in my experience of not just people who've went to different schools, but even meeting pupils as they are at school, is that the one thing kids from private schools never lack is confidence.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's always a good thing. You know, there's a healthy dose of it, but there should also be an element of you're just as good as everybody, but you're not better than anybody. You know, and that's where the balance is for me. And the flip side of that is, of course, you could, there's a lot of complaints could be said about school systems, certainly public schools. But I think it's stark, the differences in attitudes. Definitely exists. Yeah. Definitely.
We're going to have to let you go in a minute, which I don't want. Han, did you have another question there?
Sorry, I don't worry.
Had an intake of breath.
No, I was going to say we probably ought to, because God knows what's happened to us. We've been on here.
So. I know. She gone yet?
PM Liz Truss is to make a statement at 1:30.
Right, let's get ourselves off here, everyone, because it's 25 past.
Yeah, and the podium has the government logo on it.
Oh, wow.
Which means she will be speaking as leader of the government rather than leader of the party. It's a subtle thing, but sometimes it can tell you what's going to happen. There was a time when Theresa May did it, and because it didn't have the government thing, because everyone thought, oh, she's going to resign, but it didn't have the government logo, so you thought, oh, maybe she's not. She's going to be speaking as Conservative. So who knows? We'll see.
Oh, wow.
5 minutes. We will find her. By the time you're listening to this, listener, you will be way ahead of us.
Absolutely.
We're going to find out if Liz Truss will still be our Prime Minister. Who knows?
Madness.
Could be one of you, listener, by the end of the day. We're going to go for a lottery now. And if your number comes up, you're
Why not? Eh? Why not?
It's worth a go.
So, Mary, we just finish up the show every week asking our guests, obviously, we've just spent the last hour celebrating yourself. If you could celebrate any working class hero today in your life, who would that be? Don't say Noel Gallagher.
No. Do you know who I'm going to? And this is genuine, the staff in Parliament.
Oh, that's amazing.
Wow.
They're the ones keeping things ticking over, and the absolute chaos. Like, I feel like I'm always so apologetic to the staff, because I just feel like you're all forced to look after all these overgrown children who are running about revolting, like spoiled brats. They're the ones that keep things running and keep us safe. Yeah, they do some job. And they deserve much better than what this current government's given them, definitely. So I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with
that. That's nice. I love that. Well, we're going to celebrate all of them lot slogging their guts out in Parliament.
Yeah.
And you today, Mary Black.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's been such an honour, honestly. And thank you, just on my part, very private part, being very visible for the queer and trans community.
Thank you very
much.
Keep
going, keep fighting the fight, mate, because it's very important and it means a lot. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Right, see you later.
Oh my God, I literally feel like that's the most like current affairs I think I've ever felt in my life.
of course, when this goes out, it could be sort of like 4 months down the line, but it was still really exciting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Laura Koonsberg, eat your heart out.
Oh, gosh. I mean, aside from the exciting stuff with it all kicking off, I mean, Mary literally had the TV on in the background, didn't she? Christ. I mean, I've always been a massive fan, a bit like when, you know, I first heard Jess Phillips talk. It was like that when I first saw Mary stand up and make a speech. And I just thought, it's just somebody that I could connect with, that spoke sense, that, I don't know,
in a way
just,
that's easy to connect with.
And you know, and everything obviously that Mary's doing for the queer and trans community is hugely important, and I just think she rocks. I just think, like, I wish we had her over here, actually.
I know, it's made me think about moving to Glasgow. She's extraordinary, isn't she? And also, you know, it must get tiring for her, I suppose, people banging on about her age. But it's not just about the personal achievement of being 19 and being elected. It's about the fact that young people see themselves in her, see that they can engage and be engaged by politics. And that just feels like something we so desperately need in Britain. She's at the forefront of that. What a guest. That was so amazing.
I know, I'm chuffed with that one. Well, that's it for this week. You can join us next week with a brand new guest. It's very exciting. What are you off to do now, honey? Putting your car in the garage, aren't you?
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm actually off to, and this will be old news by the time you hear this, listener, but I'm off to see who the bloody hell's going to be Prime Minister in this here country. So let's find, well, we're A
yeah, let's
not.
Get off quick. Let's get off quick.
See you next week.
The Proper Class podcast is produced by Michelle Farr-Scott for Rangaby Productions, edited by James Torrance, with music by Tommy Music.
Please don't forget to like and subscribe. Spread the word. Tell your friends, neighbours, whoever will listen. We've also got an Instagram page. Ooh, get us. And you can follow all the news and goss at The Proper Class Podcast. And if you haven't nodded off yet, we've also gone and got ourselves an official email. So do get in touch. The email is properclasspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, folks. And remember, keep it classy.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.